All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about a movie that should have been in theaters, but of course everything's still closed down. And so instead we paid $20 to watch it on video on demand. It is Judd Apatow's The King of Staten Island, starring Pete Davidson. I'm realizing now as I say that out loud, this is the first Judd Apatow movie I did not get to see in a theater. That's kind of a shame. But you know what? We had a fun time talking about the movie. Joining me for this episode is JC from the Screen Fix podcast, a podcast that I've been a guest on a few times now, and I always enjoy talking to JC as well as his co-host, Lady One, who's been on Piecing It Together a bunch of times. So we have a great conversation coming up for you. And as always, before we get into that, I do want to remind you to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, and follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Also join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where the conversation continues about all the movies we talk about here on the show. So, you know, I think without any further ado, we might as well just jump into this episode. We got a nice long conversation for you guys. So let's talk about The King of Staten Island.
JC, stamp of sound for Piecing Pod, take two.
Take two, yeah.
Season five, episode 473.
Pretty close, actually.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. You are prolific. We cannot pump them out. If we try to do that, we go insane. Like, we become, like, she becomes grouchy, mm-hmm. I become mean, and we don't want to podcast with each other. It's, like, it's not good.
Well, I got to tell you, JC from Screen Fix, and by the way, it's going to be going at this point on the episode, but...
you can't bring that up. Don't say that I fight with my co-host, and she gets angry, and we get terrible, we get mean with each other.
I'm sure she'll appreciate it, but I gotta tell you, I'm you know, June has been a busy month. I don't know how May has been a busy month with everything, with trying to fit in older movies with the missing pieces, with trying to fit in new movies with all the streaming stuff, and I don't know. I'm gonna have to slow it down a little bit for July. It's like there's just too many damn movies. When you're kind of, you know, narrowing it down to theatrically released movies, you can kind of have a better schedule, you know, going forward. Yeah, now it's everything.
It's hard. I think my podcast, Screen Fix, has struggled with, like, not just making episodes to make episodes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we want to still put out an episode that where we both have something to say.
Sure.
And we're not just making an episode because, well, we didn't have one this week. What should we do? You know, mm-hmm. because it's been kind of a weird dead zone. And now they're pushing movies back now. Tenet, 2 weeks. Wonder Woman is now October. Mm-hmm. I mean, is Mulan still going to come out?
Well, we know that Russell Crowe movie's coming out. That's the one thing we can be sure of.
Yeah, and I don't care about Mulan because it's not a musical. That's not my Mulan.
Yeah, not JC's Mulan.
No,
but
today, Donny Osmond, no way.
Today we're going to talk about another movie that probably should have been in theaters at one point, although we'll get into it as we're talking about this movie. I think it is kind of more suited for TV in a way, but the movie is The King of Staten Island, Judd Apatow's new film. And, you know, first things first, JC, you you volunteered to be my co-host for this episode. Yeah. I take it you are a huge Judd Apatow fan, is that right?
No. No, I'm not a huge Judd Apatow fan. I think that in a way he damaged comedy for a decade at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I have reasons for that. I think, like, it's that whole, like, let your talent improv away and we'll just take the best take or the best joke and
sure.
create a movie out of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that that really killed comedy for a while. And it's not really him so much, even though he has terrible tendencies with his movies too. They're overlong. Right. There's all kinds of unresolved side plots and just they really meander. All of his movies do it.
Meandering is the thing, for
meandering
sure.
Meandering is definitely the thing with his movies. And, you know, I think he gets away with some of that improv by having people be kind of directionless slobs surrounded by stoner friends and weirdos. Like, it's when he's making these, like, man-child movies or, you know, people stuck in a rut movies, you can probably improv some of that. But, you know, there's always been, you know, improv movies. I mean, there's been just movies that are all improv, like, what is the Turn It Up to 11.
Christopher Guest movies.
Right.
Spinal Tap.
Right.
All
like,
that.
This is Spinal Tap. You know, and, you know, there were great 80s improvers like Bill Murray. The thing is, the 80s, those movies where people are improvising in the 80s are very different. Like, all these movies have talented people in them, but they're different kinds of movies. Like, 80s improvisational comedies were more about fuck the man making a statement against established authority. They were always about rich people suck, authority figures suck, we got to stick it to them. And they were these like wacky middle finger movies where the schmarmy hero, slacker hero, is, you know, improvising jokes at the expense of this clueless authority figure or rich person.
Right.
Like, it's a different, they're more wacky and more like kind of like getting one over on somebody. These Apatow movies are 40-Year-Old Virgin worked, and I don't think a lot of his other ones worked very, very well. And that's because, like, in his subsequent movies after 40-Year-Old Virgin, he's like, Apatow movies are more about like these man children that have like a lesson to learn and they need to grow up, and there's some serious issues in there, whether it's like turning 40 and dealing with whether or not you're still in love with someone or whether or not you're still desirable, or like get somebody getting pregnant, or it's things. These are not wacky ideas. Like, these are, there's some pretty serious ideas being thrown in here. And when you're letting people improv over it, characters don't stay in character. They're just riffing, trying to say the funniest thing. And, you know, they're suddenly meandering in and out of their own character. And that's where I think things fail and get out of whack. And there have been a lot of, and you can see it happening when you're watching a bad version of one of these. Life of the Party, Night School, like these movies where you just see the really talented people, Melissa McCarthy, Tiffany Haddish, you know, Kevin Hart, you're seeing these people, they're saying funny things, but they're saying just anything, and it's out of character, and it's random, and it's making for this, like, disjointed movie experience. I think the Ghostbusters remake suffered from this the worst, and that's Paul Feig, who is a Apatow guy. They both were from Freaks and Geeks. They both worked on Freaks and Geeks, and he had that same get four funny people and just let them riff. And you can see in all of the making of footage, it's literally just them line after line after line. In fact, I know there's Chris Hemsworth said that in the scene where he's just sitting at the table and they're interviewing him, he said that like Paul Feig just literally just left the camera on for like hours. And it just he just was able to say whatever
it's the
he
Apatow
wanted.
School.
There's like somebody get him some lines for Christ's sake. You know, like it's just that's not really the best way to make a movie. And I think that that's where where people took what Apatow did and they do it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think he's partially to blame too, because I really don't think he's made any really great movies since 40-Year-Old Virgin. You know, that's I know I just went off on a tangent there, but you asked me.
It's all good. I did. I certainly did. And I agree with bits and pieces. I disagree with bits and pieces. I'm not going to like go down the list right now because I'm sure a lot of that stuff is going to come up as we're going through puzzle pieces in this conversation. One thing, though, before we get to our first puzzle piece that I do want to bring up is you mentioned that you did like The 40-Year-Old Virgin. It's your favorite of his movies. We had discussed at one point possibly doing a Missing Pieces episode on that movie. Is that why that was something that was, you know, possibly on your minds, because you actually do like that Apatow?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that's the one, because that one is not, Steve Carell's character isn't really he's not really a stuck stuck in life slacker. He's definitely a character. He's got his own. He is stuck, but he's not like a man child who's like a directionless man child. He's like,
right.
He's his own interesting character. Steve Carell brings a lot to that character of like the virgin, and he's, you know, and he does have his, you know, slackery type of, you know, coworkers, but the movie has more energy and doesn't feel as lazy as the ones that come after it.
For sure. I can totally see that as a as a way of looking at it. And I think also one other thing before we get into our first puzzle pieces here is I think a major part of whether this formula works, that like the whole Apatow thing is how good the performers are, really. And I mean, when it's Paul Rudd doing the, doing the improv bits and all that, you know, it's so much fun to watch. When it's Steve Carell, it's so much fun to watch. You know, even Seth Rogen is pretty great in most of his things.
Yeah.
Then you come to The King of Staten Island and you get Pete Davidson and these other people. And there's definitely a, you know, a younger than me audience who loves this guy. I don't necessarily know what it is that they love, but well, you know, it's interesting.
Pete Davidson doesn't know why anyone likes him.
There you go.
The man himself.
Yeah, there you go. And I mean, I think he does a fine job in this, but at the same time, I don't know. I'm not recognizing him as improvising hilarious lines that only could have come from the mind of Pete Davidson. They just seem like comedy lines. But again, we're going to get into a lot of that as we get into some pieces. And I know we discussed ahead of time that coming up with pieces for this one was a little bit tough. But, I've got some.
Tough.
You've got some. Yeah, it's a weird. I got to say, when I was making my notes, I don't usually do this with movies. Usually I have fully formed.
Yeah.
Like pieces when I'm watching a movie, but I wrote down like a movie about a loser, a movie about growing up, a movie about getting along with your stepdad.
Same thing. And okay, hold on. David Rosen of Piecing It Together.
Yes.
I know why it was so hard for me to find puzzle pieces to this. Do you want to know?
I want to know.
Because
JC of Screen Fix.
This is only 2/3 of a movie.
Mm.
It's the most meandering first act of a movie, long meandering first act of a movie you've ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
A really truncated, tiny act two, and no act three whatsoever. Our character, once he starts to turn around, it ends. Not when he does turn around. When he starts.
Yeah.
So it's missing the whole act three. So that's why when you watch this movie, you're like, you can't find any pieces because it's 2/3 of a movie. So it's so vague. That's why you're like growing slacker, growing up movie. Like you can't place it because it's not a full movie. It's a piece of a movie. That's what makes it's like a puzzle. We're trying to piece together something that doesn't have all the pieces. That's what makes finding puzzle pieces so hard here.
Wow.
Because it's
I like that metaphor. That works.
Right.
It fits.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, why don't we try? What do you got for your first piece?
Oh boy. All right. I'm just gonna go for my best comparison first because like I said, this was so hard for me. But my first puzzle piece is actually Say Anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because Say Anything is one of those movies that also is kind of missing its third act. So it's kind of the same thing. Our character at the end, does he change? Is he breaking through at the end of Say Anything? Lloyd Dobler, the slacker, who, like Pete Davidson, who wants to open a tattoo restaurant, which people find absurd. Lloyd Dobler wants to do kickboxing, which everyone also thinks is absurd that that's what he wants to do with his life. And just kind of not motivated to do much or be much. In fact, he says that all he wants to do is just be with Ione Skye's character. And right. at the end of the movie, does he change? No, all he does is he gets on a plane and goes to England with Ione Skye. He's not doing anything for himself, really.
Sure.
So I found some similarities there with this character who seemingly has no direction. His one ambition is found to be ridiculous by the other characters in the movie. And at mm-hmm. the end, does he change?
Question mark.
Not really. He's still Lloyd. Still Lloyd. Has he learned any real life lessons? I don't know. Pete Davis, they try in this movie to give him some life lessons, but they feel a little unearned, and mm-hmm. and you don't see that next step. So that's where Say Anything really was a puzzle piece for me.
Sure. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I love that with the ending, especially, like you said, you really just don't know if this person has grown or learned anything, or, you know, if the next stage is going to be, you know, anything new, or if it's just basically going to be continuing to meander through life, because the person really hasn't shown that much capacity for growing at this point.
Yeah.
Just a hint or a spark or a little bit. But I'll go to my first piece, which I think was the first like obvious one that came to mind, and that's Adam Sandler's Big Daddy. Which, I mean, again, you know, it's the same kind of thing. You got this like kind of loser drifting through life who in theory grows a little bit, thanks in part to a relationship with a kid, and in mm-hmm. this case with two kids, the kids of his mom's new boyfriend. And you know, aside from that, is it completely earned, or is it just a fun, you know, movie? You know, it's more of just like a fun little story to see this guy, you know, maybe grow a little bit, but we don't get to see too much of that. I think Big Daddy, for all of the, you know, shit Adam Sandler gets for, you know, making dumb movies in theory, I think is actually a pretty great movie. I think people look back at it pretty damn fondly when it comes up. Certainly, maybe the best of his like Happy Madison movies.
Wow, that's bold.
Think
Big Daddy's the best Happy Madison movie.
The best, most well-rounded. Maybe not the best for just straight up comedy. Then we'd of course have to go to something like Billy Madison or
Little Nicky all the way.
Little Nicky, okay.
No, I'm interesting. Just kidding.
We're learning things here.
Little Nicky is terrible, but I did live. Okay, so once upon a time, I lived in Tokyo, Japan, and one of the VHS tapes in the random apartment that the company gave me to live in had a VHS copy of Little Nicky.
Mm.
Wait, was it a VHS? It was a combo VHS. I don't. Anyway. We had Little Nicky in that random apartment, so I probably watched Little Nicky 10 times in the year that I lived there. Yeah,
I don't have that that story, but I've probably watched Little Nicky 10 times anyway.
It has its charms. It's terrible, but it's also just Adam Sandler absolutely unhinged and allowed to do whatever the heck he wants, and it's nuts.
Absolutely.
Anyway, wow, yeah, I'm probably just like a purist. I probably just go back to good old Billy Madison and but that wasn't Happy Madison yet, right? No,
that's actually a good point. I don't think it was yet.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, what do you got for your next piece?
Oh boy. All right. So my lesser pieces. Pieces.
We're going downhill.
So this one I actually picked Clerks 2.
Okay.
And the reason why I picked Clerks 2 is Clerks 2 is, you know, who are Dante and Randall, but there are quintessential 90s slackers. And, you know, I don't know why I just keep sticking with this slacker genre. Probably the slacker genre is very familiar to me, I guess. I mean, I am a Gen Xer, and that is the slacker generation. Maybe that's just, I'm in tune to my own generation. But so those are the ultimate slackers, but Clerks 2 deals with really with being stuck and making changes and being afraid to make changes. you know, it's Dante who wants to make the changes. It's Randall who's resistant. But really, it's just about, you know, that same thing. They're not 24. They're supposed to be, they're in their 30s now. But it's that same, we need to get motivated to get out of here. You know, and just like in this movie, they end up in, you know, trouble with the law, and they realize that they need to make some changes, and there you go. Clerks too, our ultimate slackers, stuck getting in trouble with the law, and they need to make some changes. Of course, at the end of that, they end up, you know, staying in town and buying the Quick Stop, but because Jay and Silent Bob are randomly rich, they have money from selling drugs.
Yeah, apparently.
But, you know, they don't exactly move past that. So again, just like in Staten Island, is anything changing? I don't know. We're stuck. Mm-hmm. We're slackers and we're stuck. So
yeah.
Clerks too. That's my second puzzle piece.
I dig it. I don't remember Clerks 2 very well. When we did our Jay and Silent Bob reboot episode, it hit me that movie is just a straight up blur. But it sounds like what you're saying there, I can see some parallels for sure. And certainly they are some of our favorite cinema slackers. That is for sure. And I, you know, it's funny when it comes to the idea of, like, you know, the slacker or stoner type of movie.
Yeah.
Part of me wishes we got more of that in this movie, because we really don't get that much of him and his friends, or we don't really get to know any of them that well. But at the same time, I think the best bits are outside of that, like when we're dealing with Bill Burr's character and Marissa Tomei. I think that stuff is kind of better than any of the stuff with the young people. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a push and pull there.
Yeah, the friends, the other slackers that are not really going anywhere. I actually liked that. That was like that slice of life part of the movie, where it's like, I'm getting a little window into this world of Staten Island, and they were that entry way into like the way of life that is Staten Island. So I definitely liked just seeing them and like their outlook on things and the way that they spoke and the way that they acted. And yeah, I thought they were some of the best stuff in the movie too. And, none of them really seemed like they had that much motivation to get out of Staten Island. It was like one of those, one of those same situations where they're just kind of stuck in this rut. Although Kelsey, the female, she wants to stay in Staten Island and change it.
She wants to make
Staten Island to Williamsburg, which is a little weird, because I'm guessing, so she wants rich white hipsters to move in and drive rent prices up so her friends can't live there anymore.
Sure.
And then have condos get built for Manhattanites looking to start a family across the water. That doesn't really sound like the best solution to me, but, you know, go Kelsey.
Yeah, at least she has a dream.
At least she...
So, you know, actually, that talking about the friends, the stoners, the little crew of misfits, I try not to always, you know, talk about a director's previous work as a puzzle piece, but I did want to bring up Knocked Up.
Yep.
I thought Knocked Up is the closest comparison to a previous Apatow movie. Partially because of that group of friends.
It's
it's like the most similar
sex scenes in movies website.
Yeah, that's right.
Until they're introduced to Mr. Skin, which has existed for years.
Yeah. No, that very much felt like the same, not the same group of friends, but that group of friends for 2020 Staten Island, whatever that is. Apparently, if that's what people are like there, then that's I'm going along with what the movie is telling me, you know. But that it's that same group for that time, and then also the main characters, you know, growing up and that whole thing, trying to rise to the occasion of you know, maybe getting out of the whole Arrested Development thing. So, but I think it's definitely the closest comparison within the Judd Apatow oeuvre.
For sure, 100%, and that's his like group that he allows to just improv away and just say goofy stuff. And it works with stoners. So, Apatow, you know, good on you, Apatow. You tricked all of their filmmakers into thinking they could also just let people improv and riff and make a movie.
Yeah. I wonder how familiar, Apatow, I'm assuming, is 50 at this point. I wonder how familiar he is with young stoners today and like what they're into, or how much of that is letting, you know, obviously we know there's a lot of improv involved, like letting those people do what they think, you know. I can't imagine that he knows that much.
Yeah, I know there's some of the flack against him is he only makes movies really about like white LA, mm-hmm. like decently well off people who
sure
have like a couple friends that smoke weed. So it's actually so one thing that I will give Apatow is that he ventured out of his comfort zone a little bit and went over to New York
for sure
to do something a little bit different.
A little bit, yeah. So what do you got for your next piece?
My next two are pretty similar. I don't, because they're like, King of Staten Island is very much a movie about Staten Island and about, mm-hmm. what's interesting about it is it's not so much about leaving Staten Island. It's about just, my next one was actually, I need to stop sticking with this slacker thing because it's terrible. I'm going to do one more slackery one, I think.
It's all good.
So I had another one, and only because of its singular view of one place, and that's, I just picked good old Richard Linklater's Slacker for its very one town it's just one town centric view. The whole thing is just Austin Texanites and about sure. that just Austin Texanites stuck in their Austin malaise. And it very much to me, when I was just thinking about movies where people are just kind of, you know, stuck in their malaise. I mean, this movie's called Slacker, for Christ's sake. Like, it's just people who are maybe not so motivated. And also, you know what's funny about these kind of slackery movies and people in these movies is they all seem very, they all also have something very important to say as well. There's always that one who like knows the conspiracy theory or knows what's really going on in the world out there. And the only truth is smoking this weed, man. You know, there's
totally.
Yeah. And, you know, there's Rich, you know, Slacker has some of that stuff, whether it's like the UFO conspiracist or things like that. So I just, I picked Richard Linklater's Slacker for that kind of, let's get a window into Arrested Development in one mm-hmm. town.
For so sure.
That's why I picked that one.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great one. I haven't seen it in so many years, but I have to assume that at some point while they were putting this movie together, they, you know, that has to be on their mind, a movie like Richard Linklater's Slacker. Like, they had to have been like, we're making Slacker for this time right now, you know? And I think that there's a very, you know, it's almost like a mainstream version of like a mumblecore kind of indie kind of sensibility that yeah. I think Apatow's going for with this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's
that's all born out of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's that whole meandering first act. It's mm-hmm. the fact that, like, it's all those random threads that pop in the movie that never get resolved to. Like,
yeah.
For example, the restaurant fight club, which is never really that funny, and right. it never makes sense in the story. Like, I'm like, why does the uncle, or that was his uncle, right? Like, why? I'm so. Like, why does the uncle do that to his employees? Like, what's the history of that uncle that makes him put on a fight club in this place? And after Pete Davidson gets punched out that one time, It's not in the movie anymore. Like, it's not, it's so, like, it's non-consequential. It's not consequential at all to the plot, which is so weird, but it's this, like, the whole first, oh my God, the movie's so long. The whole first, like, hour and a half is just this meandering, and I would say that, you know, if this thing was made by a different filmmaker other than Judd Apatow, I would say that that's on purpose. But I just think Judd Apatow was throwing in whatever the heck he wanted, you know. So
I think so. Yeah. I think so too. I think I would go the opposite direction though. And I mentioned earlier about, you know, the way we're not getting this in the theaters and whether or not it's better on TV. I almost feel that this would have been better as a TV series. Judd Apatow's, he produced it, his series Love, which also, you know, took his sensibilities and turned it into a 10-hour, you know, you know, mini show. I think this movie might have, you know, been better if they had, you know, gone into every impulse of every one of those little story threads and every, you know, little thing is an episode, and they're able to explore all that and explore this world of Staten Island's, you know, 2020 Staten Island, which we've never really seen before in any way. And, you know, really dive into all that in an extended format. I think in a weird way, 2.5 hours isn't enough for what they were trying to do.
Yeah, it's weird. It's because it's allowed to go so long, you want more from it.
Right.
It's like, yeah, it's like, wait a minute, you strung me along here for like 3 hours and this is all you did with me? Like, that's it?
Right.
Like, this is all you're giving me? I was like, 3 hours? I was like, you could have given me this and done an hour and 45 minutes. Honestly, like, you could have, you know, I didn't need to go this deep into the journey if you weren't going. I didn't need to be along for the ride this long if I knew that the destination was this shallow.
So we needed to fit 2 Kid Cudi songs, so we needed all that time.
Yes. Pursuit of Happiness in there. Yeah. Yeah, that's how I feel about that as well.
So I will go to my next piece, which actually happens to be a movie that I covered here on the show with your co-host, the Lady One. It's a movie called Garden State, from writer, director, star, auteur, if you will, Zach Braff. But I think that this movie
gets
definitely
so shit on.
It does. It totally does.
Like that, you know why? Because anything that was huge once eventually just gets shit on. Like, it's just
yeah. It really does.
It's really sad. That's like the world we live in now. It's like,
I feel like, okay, so first of all, I think Garden State, because, you know, we're dealing with, first of all, a kind of look into a certain kind of a youth culture that is, you know, feels very real. We're also dealing with the main characters dealing with mental health issues and depression, and in a pretty real way, I think. But then on just like a whole nother level for using this as a puzzle piece is what you were just saying there about the movie and its star being shit on constantly. I think Pete Davidson is someone who people just kind of love to hate in a similar way to Zach Braff. And, you know, this is the first time I've ever experienced more than like a still image and a headline in Twitter of Pete Davidson. I don't think I've ever seen a Saturday Night Live bit with him or anything like that. I don't know anything about him. I think he was perfectly fine.
That's because he's barely in any bits.
Right.
They just bring him in to like sit on the Weekend Update desk and just be Pete Davidson for a second.
It's I guess if he's carved out that niche, that's pretty cool. I don't know what to say about him. But I don't know. People do love to shit on him. I don't have anything, you know, either way to say about the guy. I mean, I think he did a fine enough job with the movie, but I think people do love to hate him in a similar way to Zach Braff.
I mean, they're different cuz he's like a stand-up comedian and Braff like wrote and directed his, like, but like, I mean, Pete, I think some of that also is going to be, I think some of the stuff that's going to hurt him a little bit is like how quickly and young that he was successful. Cause I think people like to shit on that.
Yeah. That never goes over well with, especially like the Twitter people and all that.
Twitter people, like people that have been in the industry like a long time. I don't know what other comedians think about Pete Davidson, but I actually think so. They're making this like quasi sort of semi bio pic that I find slightly uninteresting. Whereas Pete Davidson's actual life is very interesting. Like, I think in this movie, if they would have just made Pete Davidson play a little bit young and then play a little bit older and, you know, went into the tragedy. Like, if this movie is Pete Davidson dealing with the tragedy of his own father's death, which is very thinly veiled, why not? Why not just go with the true way that his father died, and why not talk about his struggles, but also the fact that he's the youngest SNL cast member ever, 20. He's on one of the biggest shows, a star-making show,
mm-hmm.
at the age of 20. He's a kid.
I didn't realize he was that young.
And before, that's when he started. And before that, he already had a career. He was doing stand-up. He had some movie roles, like cameo-type roles, when he's a kid. Like, so yeah. young. So I find his actual life so much more interesting, with so much more to mine, to be honest, that I don't know why they didn't just make a biopic, because people starring in their own biopic can work. Howard Stern's Private Parts is excellent.
How about Honey Boy last year?
Honey Boy.
Shia LaBeouf.
You can be in your own biopic, and also, like Howard Stern's Private Parts, you can be in your own biopic and it can be very funny.
Yeah.
So I feel like that might have been a better movie.
Interesting. I think you're probably right there.
Hopefully a shorter movie.
So what do you got for your next piece?
Oh boy, I got to do more. All right, hold on.
I got one more. So one more?
I have a bunch of bad ones. Because it's kind of that same, like, nebulous category of movie. This two-thirds of a movie we watched,
mm-hmm.
which is why you end up just Googling generic things and be like, what? Help. Help Google. So
I got to do this podcast
I
got to
do this podcast. And I just watched two-thirds of a movie. That's the whole movie somehow. So, you know, but I think we've had some good ones so far.
Let's bring it home, JC.
Yeah, so this one might be too similar to my last one, but for another kind of specific town, and also somebody who seems to be kind of a jerk and driving all the other characters crazy, I actually picked another movie that my co-host really likes. I actually picked Lady Bird. I picked Lady Bird because it's very Sacramento.
Sure.
And she's kind of a jerk in the movie. She's
absolutely
disliked. And in this movie, it's a lot of the same. There's even a line in this one. Like, his sister asks him to give mom a break when she leaves. And, like, he's like, when am I going to get my break? And she's basically like, everyone cares and coddles you. And she says, you know, you're my older brother. You're supposed to look out for me. And every second I'm away from you, I worry about you. And that's what you do to people. Like,
yeah.
And that's what it is. He's very selfish and thinks about himself all the time. Like, when he goes to visit his friend in jail, he's just there trying to see if he can crash at his house for a while. Although there is that funny beat where the one guy is not actually getting catfished, and that girl was real, and she was visiting him in jail, which I actually thought could have been a funnier reveal. But yeah, and when he sleeps with Kelsey just so he could have a place to crash, like, he's actively a jerk and just like a tornado in everyone's life. Like
yeah.
Everyone around him has to, like, he not only like wrecks their life, but he makes people worry about him. Because of how self-destructive he is as well. He's like a double-edged sword. And it's kind of like, so given his kind of unlikability and his dissatisfaction with, that's the weird thing. He's not so dissatisfaction, but, like, you know, where the setting is almost a character in the movie as well.
Sure.
I kind of picked Lady Bird, where Sacramento is definitely a setting in that, but definitely a character in that movie. And she also just struggles with being an emotional tornado for everyone around her as well. So that's why I picked Lady Bird as a a puzzle piece.
I gotta tell you, JC, you knocked it out of the park with your last piece. I love that one. I think it's great.
You're so nice. You're the nicest host.
I think it's a perfect puzzle piece for this. I think it's exactly the feeling I get from Pete Davidson's character, as like you said, this like tornado that's just kind of like sucking the energy out of everything, and mm-hmm. it's like just, you know, it's like just a total pain for everyone around. And I actually had trouble enjoying Lady Bird the first time because I was like, this person is just such a pain in the ass. And then the second time I watched it, I really loved it. I think it's a really great piece. I think it totally makes sense. And that's a great one. And I will move on to my final piece, which is not so great of a piece, but I was kind of laughing about the fact that his art, which is what is going to, you know, his career path and everything, tattoos. It's just awful. And so it reminded me of Tom Green's character in Freddy Got Fingered.
Oh no.
which is his whole path forward is his cartoons with his X-ray cat and all that. And he is not really that talented.
No, well, the thing is, in this movie, though, hold on a second. He's awful, but then suddenly he draws a really great ice flash or whatever in that notebook. And I'm like, what the heck? Why is he suddenly good? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
He's good in the middle, because then it ends with the terrible tattoo on Bill Burr's back. So it's like, why is he terrible? Then he's great, and now he's terrible again.
I think they have undiagnosed multiple personalities in there. One of them's the worst drawer ever born, and the other one is decent.
And decent. I like that.
They're not consistent with how good or bad his art is.
Yeah, very, very interesting choice. I wonder if there's, because I don't know, I see tattoos sometimes and I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't have any tattoos myself, but I wonder if people
think
those tattoos...
You don't have a little something on your belt line?
I don't have a thing, no. You think I should get something, JC?
Yeah, you should put JC down there.
Oh, okay. All right.
Artistically.
Yeah. Okay, we'll have to discuss this at a later date and time.
Okay.
And we'll see. We'll come up with something.
I'll put DR on one of my butt cheeks. You get to pick it, left or right.
Okay. I like it. Well, we got to coordinate, make sure that they, you know...
Yeah, perfect.
They go in the right ones for each
same
other,
artist.
So.
We'll go to the same artist. I'll make a trip.
Absolutely.
We'll make a weekend of it.
Well, why don't I go ahead and do the finished puzzle? We'll get into some closing thoughts on The King of Staten Island. We talked about Say Anything, Big Daddy, Clerks 2, Knocked Up, Slacker, Garden State, Lady Bird, and Freddy Got Fingered. Which we went with Slackers from beginning to end, pretty much.
we did for
the most part. I think that says a lot about what this movie is and what this character is like. And for anybody who hasn't seen the movie yet, you know, kind of what they're getting themselves into. You know, aside from that, I kind of mentioned it briefly, but I thought Bill Burr and Marissa Tomei were both great. I would have loved to see more of
Bill
them.
Bill Burr
in
is
this.
Fantastic. He actually, it's funny, I saw some interview with him, and he talked about how Judd Apatow said he had something for him, and then he said it's very normal in Hollywood to hear about something and then not hear about it forever, and then suddenly it's there in your face, and said that, like, a year later, Judd Apatow's like, hey, remember that thing I talked to you about, like, a year ago? Yeah, you want to do that still? And, of course, Bill Burr's like, wait, you're Judd Apatow, and Marissa Tomei is in the, of course, I'm not going to say no to this, and talked about how he was almost like he had total like imposter syndrome acting opposite Marissa Tomei.
Sure.
He's just he just felt like, how am I here? He seemed so just grateful and what am I trying to say, what's that word when you're not fully yourself?
Humble
that's
the word, man.
Very humble. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good for Bill Burr. Good stuff, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I kind of like his cartoon, F is for Family.
Any other closing thoughts?
Oh, man. Closing thoughts. Yeah, I mean, final thought. Yep, this was an Apatow movie. Is character change in this one? I don't think so. I think, I think it's overly long. He cuts nothing. There are just plot threads or things that happen that never come back into play ever or are not significant. It just kind of meanders around. And then they kind of throw something at the end where, okay, I guess that was a movie.
Yeah, I guess that was, I guess that's the place to wrap it up. That works, is sure. basically what they said.
Sure. So, but, you know, I don't think it's, you know, so it's not my favorite. Like, I won't watch that again. There was nothing in it that was like some comedic, you know, goldmine of a scene that I can't wait to watch on YouTube or like I can't wait to watch the movie again.
I'd say actually it's not very funny.
No.
It's probably his least funny movie, but I didn't dislike it. It's a pretty good movie, but it's not very funny. I don't think people should go into it expecting a comedy.
Yeah. I just talked King of Staten Island with the king of podcasting, David Rosen.
Well, JC from Screen Fix, have you seen another movie recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, is that a thing? It is a thing on this show.
That is a thing.
Oh, my gosh. Have I seen? Yeah, sure. Here's a movie that I did like that came out right on the heels of this movie, Five Bloods. I watched Five Bloods. That's another movie that takes its time. It does a lot of meandering, but a movie hasn't made me feel as emotionally heavy as that movie did. I had like 20 different feelings going on throughout the course of that movie. I think that is fantastic, and I think Delroy Lindo has to be the front runner for an Oscar in a year where movies are being postponed and pushed and here and there. Obviously we're having to survive on streaming fare, which has been hit or miss. The Camille Nanjiani and
The Lovebirds.
I did not think that was very good at all.
No, it wasn't.
And some of the other stuff that has come out that we have to like watch because there's not much content out there to consume. This one though, bam! Like this is a real movie. Spike Lee is on a hot streak after Black Klansman. And that's an excellent one to check out, I think.
Absolutely. Fantastic movie. And it's funny, while I was finishing up my notes for this conversation of the King of Staten Island this morning, I was just looking at my screen and I'm just like, why am I even doing this movie? Why aren't I doing Five Bloods?
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a better movie. But, this was fun, though.
this one hit number one on the streaming charts and on some of the other ones where you can... basically all the big sites where you could have rented this movie or bought this movie, it was number one. And then, so it's worth doing. I think if people are going to watch something, though, and you're going to spend your time watching something that's a little long and really good, the Five Bloods is where you're going to want to put your time.
Hell yeah. Agreed right there. Well, JC, why don't you tell people where they can find your podcast?
All right. My podcast is called Screen Fix. It is a show where we fix, quote unquote, a recent film. It doesn't mean that we're mean about it. Sometimes we fix movies we like. It's just a fun exercise, just like when you see a movie with your friends, then you go get a beer and you talk about the movie and somebody says, you know what I would have done? That's our show. So it is me. I have a co-host that goes by the Lady Wan, and we always have a guest. Well, not always, but we usually have a guest. David Rosen is an all-star on our show. This guy can fix them with the best of them. And I like having him on. His hair is as curly as mine. Curly bros, we can't get too close to each other or our hair might lock.
That's true.
So, yeah, that's a danger.
Six feet distance.
My show, you can find it at screenfixpod.com. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, I hate that thing. Everywhere where podcasts are, but it's true. And
it is true. I've seen it with my own eyes.
Right. Or you can follow us on Twitter, ScreenFixPod. We say stuff sometimes on there. I tweet stuff. And please check us out. It would be great. Our episode out right now is Extraction, and we are also doing an episode on King of Staten Island for some reason. feelings a lot like yours. But yeah, so check us out. And also, Piecing Pod is the best. Go rate and review and subscribe to Piecing Pod. Give it 5 stars. Talk about it on all your forums and your Reddits and what you kids do. David Rosen's a star.
I feel like I should cut that little last bit out and make it my new ad that I send other podcasters to insert.
In a world of wonder.
See? That's my feet!
And horror.
The military advised that the flesh-eating pigeons can only be stopped by destroying the brainstem, and that they do not poop.
That makes no sense.
Why did they do that?
One podcast fights the forces of evil.
The new and improved diabolical disintegrating death ray!
Triumphs over adversity.
Now, I'm not sure how to pronounce this word.
Boo, la, 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 la.
And brings hope.
Live your life.
Joy.
Nay.
And silliness.
Perfectly normal.
That podcast is Release the
That's painful.
Clowns. Coming to ears near your head now. Release the Clowns Sketch Comedy Podcast on Podbean, iTunes, YouTube, Spotify, and all reputable platforms.
Oh, this is most pleasing.
Yes, quite marvelous.
All right, so I would like to thank JC for joining me on that episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. The King of Staten Island is on VOD right now, so check it out, or don't. It's just all right, but you should check it out because, I mean, it's Judd Apatow. A lot of funny people involved in the movie, and Bill Burr is really good in it. So thank you all for listening. As always, I do want to remind you to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us if you're enjoying the show over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. And follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. We also have a Patreon going right now, which I do post advance episodes on. And we'll be posting some new exclusive music stuff in July. That's going to be kind of my main focus in the month of July, actually. So I'm going to be getting a lot of that put together so that way I can start getting it up on the Patreon and then also start getting my next regular album ready to go. Also, July is going to be the return of All Rice, No Beans, which I'm very excited about, which is a restaurant podcast, which I was producing all during the beginning of this year up until the COVID pandemic hit and restaurants all closed. So we made the decision to put the show on hiatus for a little bit. But Stephanie is ready to get that going, and I'm excited to get back to recording it. So more All Rice, No Beans coming your way real soon. So I think that does it for today's episode. Let's close this thing out with a piece of music, as I always do on the show. And, you know, for the Judd Apatow style of comedy film, I feel like I should go with something from my often pushed to the side and not talked about comedy rap career that I used to do back in college. And I think a good one to play would be a track called Don't Eat Fire. I feel like if Pete Davidson's character had heard the song, maybe he'd have learned something and grown up a little bit earlier on in life before things got too bad. So this is Don't Eat Fire. It's actually from a group called Demise and D-Rocks. I'm D-Rocks. And we have a whole bunch of awful, funny but awful rap music out there. Don't search for it. You don't need to listen to it, but listen to this track. And we'll be back with more Piecing It Together next week.
Come on now.
Kids, listen up now, we've got a message.
funny when you swallow burn up your tummy. Sitting on your porch with your face all torched up. Your cute little face now looks like a pork chop. If you don't wanna get a job working at a truck stop, for fuck's sake, put out the flame, listen to hip hop. Shake a man's hand, use your left hand when you smack around a bitch. Be polite and treat her nice, make sure you call her miss. Take her out every night to eat at Ruth's Chris. If you want, you could even offer to pay, but don't open the door for her, cause that shit's gay. Tell her she looks pretty and compliment her mouth. If you don't have a chimney, be sure to pull out. If she gets thirsty, share your fat tire. If she gets kinda tired, share your coat to keep her wired. Don't get caught if you're gonna be a liar. Don't date a bitch if she's gonna be a crier. You can't get no pussy, man, your dick should retire. But most of all, boys and girls don't eat fire.
Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.